Good morning, everyone. Second session of the morning. Welcome. This is the Abundantly Crescent session. My name is Carolyn Chow. I'm a lead program manager with the reporting services team. Can you all hear me okay? It sounds a little bit quiet out there. Okay. As I said, I'm a lead program manager with the reporting services team. I'm here visiting from Redmond and very happily, especially with this morning's weather. It's absolutely fantastic outside. I own all of the end-user reporting tools for reporting services, so Report Designer, if you use that, Report Builder, and now Project Crescent, which is what we're going to talk about today. How many of you in the room are IT professionals? Raise hands. Okay. Developers? How about any business users? Oh, not a single one. Okay. All right. So Project Crescent is not made for you guys, okay? Let's get that out of the way up front. Project Crescent is, you're here to learn about what it can do for your business users, right? So you're here to understand what it takes to build the solution, have ad hoc reporting end to end. That's what Project Crescent is really about. A lot of the session does focus on the capabilities of Crescent itself so that you can evaluate and understand whether it's a good fit for your organization. But a lot of what I'm going to be talking about, like I said, is really not geared towards you. It's educating you so you can go back to your business users and make a call about whether or not it's the right solution for you and whether its capabilities are the things that you're looking for. Okay? So that'll help set some context for what we're going to be doing today. So I'm going to talk to you about what Crescent is, learn about its key capabilities, we'll talk about architecture and requirements, and how it kind of fits into the Microsoft BI stack. And very hopefully, we will have some fun with data, because that's what Crescent really is focused about. And so before we go ahead and dive into some of the details of the session, let's have a little quick review of Microsoft Business Intelligence that'll help set the context for what we'll be talking about. At the bottom, of course, you see all of your different data sources in your organization. You may have some, you may have several, you may have all of these as data sources, of course. So we have SQL Server, we have your Oracle, SAP, all of those third-party products that you may have, including their applications. Dynamics, line of business apps, data feeds now are a big deal. On top of that, of course, you have SQL Server itself, which is the most widely deployed EIM and BI platform, right? It includes analysis services, reporting services, integration services, master data services, which shipped with 2008 R2. And that's all part of the SQL Server offering, and that's what we call the data platform, okay? And SQL Server 2008 R2. And then on top of that, we have all of our front-end tools. These are the things that your users use to access the data and be able to make sense of it. And that includes SharePoint with dashboards and scorecards, SharePoint also for collaboration, Excel workbooks, Power Pivot applications, the end-user tools for reporting services, Report Designer, Report Builder. There's a whole suite of products and capabilities that come with the Microsoft BI platform tailored for the specific needs of the different audiences that you have in your organization. And that Office suite, of course, is the most broadly deployed and used productivity suite in the world. Okay? So really, the Microsoft BI platform encompasses SQL Server and Office and SharePoint. Okay? It's one offering. It's one solution stack. None of the individual products by themselves is what we consider business intelligence offering from Microsoft. So really quickly, there's a whole session on what's new in SQL Server Denali. I think it's tomorrow morning, so if you're interested in knowing kind of what's going on overall in SQL Server, please do go to that session. But just a quick review of the pillars of Denali. There are three of them. The first, of course, is Mission Critical Platform. And hopefully some of you were at Nicholas Stritzis's session right next door this morning where he showed Always On. That's a huge part of our Mission Critical offering in Denali. And it's really about increasing the flexibility and the ability to have a solution that's high availability, fails over, and has really easy ways to have that scalability and capability. Also, with SQL Server 2008 R2, we had some great offerings with Parallel Data Warehouse entering the market for us. And we will continue to invest in that area, and that's all around the warehouse scale and performance capabilities. In the middle, we have developer and IT productivity. This is for you guys, realizing the lower cost of administration, of development, getting solutions prototyped and deployed quickly. That's kind of a lot of our focus in terms of the developer tools that we have. And building flexible, innovative applications, of course. Pervasive insight is where we're going to focus most of our time today, and that's where a lot of the BI capabilities come in. Our vision for BI has not changed in the last 15 years, right? It's still about bringing BI to the masses, and with Office and SharePoint, that's a lot of the direction that we're heading in terms of having capabilities out of the box that utilize the familiar paradigms that your users are working with SharePoint and Office, and expanding that capability to give your users the ability to make data and BI a part of their daily activities. It's not a specialized activity. We don't want it to be a specialized activity. We want it to be easy enough and accessible enough to everyone in the organization. Okay? And one more quick thing about that. With SQL Server 2008 R2, we introduced the in-memory analytics, and that was with the VertiPack engine. And the VertiPack engine is a column store engine that allows you to build in-memory indexes or in-memory caches of data. And we're continuing to invest in that, and I'm going to talk about that some more as we continue on in the session. So then finally, specifically for reporting and alerting, we have three pillars that we're focusing on, and this is kind of what my group does. There is a session about all three of these pillars tomorrow. It's at 1-ish in the afternoon. And I'll be going through these in a little more detail. So if you're interested in knowing specifically, more broadly, what's going on in reporting, come to my session tomorrow. So we'll go from the right to the left, because we'll end up with Project Crescent in this session. There are three, like I said, three main pillars for reporting services in SQL Server Denali. The first is really enabling SharePoint as a shared service for reporting services. Reporting services has been an application for SharePoint for the last several releases, but there's still been some separation of reporting services as an installation, as a feature of SharePoint that we weren't able to have without this new capability of having reporting services as a true shared service of SharePoint. So that's going to be coming in Denali. That means all of the management tools and all of the management capabilities for reporting services now come directly with SharePoint. You manage it like any other SharePoint application. It's fully integrated. It uses all of SharePoint's capabilities out of the box. There's one catalog, so there's not separate catalog. There's not separate config tools anymore. You get to use PowerShell scripts. You have logging is integrated with SharePoint logging, so you go ahead and do all of that directly in SharePoint, and you manage your reporting services integration directly from SharePoint. So that also gives us a lot of capabilities out of the box for cross-farm reporting. We get built-in scale-out for the reporting services applications because we're just taking advantage of SharePoint's out-of-the-box capabilities for scaling out, okay, and load balancing also. So that's SharePoint in a nutshell, and like I said, I'll cover that in more detail tomorrow. In the middle is a new capability called end-user alerting, and this is the ability from any report that you have in your organization. How many of you use reporting services today in your organization? Very nice. Okay. So if you define reports today, you know that, I know for me personally, I receive a ton of reports every day, right? We actually use our product a whole ton internally. We track all of our projects using our reports. So every morning, and we run Scrum, so every morning I come in and I get reports for the progress of the project, each individual Scrum team's progress, what they've done for each individual story, the number of bugs in the system, how close we are in terms of code coverage on the test side. So there's a ton of information going on there. And what happens a lot with pretty much everyone in the organization is you get overwhelmed by that information. So what you really want is the ability to know when exceptions are happening, right? So that's what end-user alerting is all about. It's the ability when you're looking at a report as an end-user to be able to configure some very simple rules that allow you to get exceptions in an email when that exception happens, right? So as an end-user, if I'm looking at a report that has sales information, for example, I can come in and say, well, send me an email when sales go over 50,000 in this area, okay? And I don't have to go to somebody else or wait on someone to create a rule or create a specific report for that. I'm looking at the report itself. It's got sales on it already. I can use some very simple UI for creating the rule that says, send me an email when the product sales of bikes goes over 50,000, okay? And I'll show that also at the session tomorrow. And the other things that we've done in this area are update our, in terms of alerting, of course, those alert rules and all of that capability is managed, again, directly in SharePoint. So you get to use SharePoint to see all of your alerts. As IT folks, you get to manage the alerts directly in SharePoint. You can see them by user, you can see them by report, and you can manage them directly there, just like you would with any other capability of reporting services in SharePoint mode. So in addition to that, we've done some work in order to upgrade our export formats from the 2003 formats to the Office 2007-2010. This is basically getting you the XLSX and DocX formats. They will be on by default, and a lot of folks have been waiting for that. So that's just something that we've promised and are going to deliver on. We're also upgrading our tools to Dev10. That's not on the slide, but of course, you know, as you move forward with your organization and as Dev10 gets rolled out, that would be Visual Studio 2010. So you'll be able to go ahead and use BIDS directly in Dev10 also, as well as the other BI capabilities from Microsoft. So, and finally, on the left-hand side is the Empower End Users pillar for reporting services, and that's where Project Crescent kind of really fits in. And it's about ad hoc reporting. It's about enabling your end users to self-service their own reports so that they don't have to wait and, submit requests to you, have you define data, have you create the reports, and have them tell you that that's not exactly what they wanted, right? So this is about giving them the ability to create their own reports in a really easy-to-use way, and that's all driven by a metadata layer, which is the BI semantic model, and I'll talk about that also. So this is our a little kind of internal code name for Project Crescent, and it's a little logo. We'll have a real name as soon as marketing decides what it is. So Project Crescent, what is it? It's an interactive data exploration and visual presentation experience. There's not that many words, but they're very important words in there. The interactive part is very important to us. Users today, they really need interactivity, right? People don't want to wait around for a long time. They don't want to press a button and wait for 2 minutes for a report to run. And they especially don't want to have to design without knowing what's going on in their design. Users need that constant feedback of what am I looking at? Do I have the right filters? Do I have the right data on the page? So that interactive data exploration is very important. And then visual presentation is also very important. We want to, out of the box, enable Crescent to be presentation ready at all times. And that means it's optimized for the screen. It's made to be used online. It's made to be shared online. And we optimize the user experience around that. Okay. So the easiest way to talk about Crescent is not to talk about it, but to show it. So I'll go ahead and do that. And then we'll come back and kind of look at what's going on underneath the covers. Make sure my laptops don't fall asleep while I do that. Okay. So switch to two. There we go. All right, so Project Crescent is also integrated into reporting services in SharePoint mode. So what you're looking at is a normal SharePoint document library. And what I have in there and what you can do is be able to launch Project Crescent either from an Excel workbook that has a Power Pivot model associated with that workbook. And I'll show you that in a few minutes. And then, or you can create a reporting services data source, shared data source, and most of you have reporting services, so you understand this notion of shared data sources. And that can point to, and I'll show it to you, an analysis services server that has the new type of model associated with it, okay? So in the drop-down list, and again, these are not the final marketing names, so bear with me, there will be some changes here. But right now, and everything I'm showing you is CTP3. It's available for download. You can go ahead and use it the way it is. So in CTP3, you'll see Microsoft Business Intelligence Semantic Model shows up on the list. And this is my data source, which is a model that I've published to analysis services. That is a VertiPack model. We'll talk about that too. And basically, I'm creating this shared data source to point to it, and I'll be able to use it there. And you can test it, make sure it works. Okay. So let me go ahead and create a new report. And you'll see that there's a drop-down menu that allows you to create a Crescent report. And when I do that, it'll go ahead and launch Crescent. Crescent is a web-based tool, so it is fully thin. and it is a Silverlight application. And in CTP3, it requires Silverlight 4 in order to run in your environment. By the time we RTM, it will require Silverlight 5. We've been working very, very closely with the Silverlight team on a set of both performance enhancements and capabilities to enable Crescent to really, really perform, and some of the functionality that we want to add is dependent upon Silverlight 5. One of the big ones is print. You all expect print to work when you create data, and we had to work with the Silverlight team to enhance some of their print capabilities in order to get that in. So by the time we ship Denali, it will require Silverlight 5, so that's something to keep in mind. But basically, Project Crescent is designed with the Microsoft Office paradigms. Specifically, we look at the design patterns and usage patterns around Excel and PowerPoint, and we kind of bring that together, and we think of Crescent kind of like the PowerPoint for data, right? So if I come in here, I can, of course, add a new title to my report, and I'll call it Movie Sales. And the data I have is encapsulated in this model that's on this right-hand side. And the model is just metadata about the underlying data that I'm connecting to, right? So what I have in this case is some movie data that talks about the different types of movies I have in my catalog. This is basically a movie distributor database. And it's actually fairly real data from the Xbox Live service. So, you know, the Xbox Live service serves movies, and we got a little bit of a snapshot of data from them. It's been changed a little bit to, of course, make it presentable, but in its essence, it is real data. So there's information about the movies themselves, and that comes actually from a third-party source, which I'll talk to you about a little bit later. And then there's also the sales information, which is actually downloads and viewings of the movies online. Then there's some geographic information and some data information about that. So as an end user, when I come in, I see what I'm able to report on. And in order to explore, because exploration, like I said, is very important to users, all I have to do is click on something like movies in the database. And what that will do is go ahead, and you can see that some of the fields for movies got checked, right? There's metadata. I'm connecting to a metadata layer. That's the BI semantic model. And I'll talk in more detail about that in a little while. But the BI semantic model allows me to really set some properties in the data that give the user here a really nice experience, right? So one of those nice things is to tag by default the most interesting fields about each of the different types of entities that you may have, whether it's movies or products or regions and salespeople or anything like that. You help the user, guide the user in the experience by giving them a great way to get started. So I got the list of movies, and I got the title, the poster, the director, the provider, those things about movies that are most interesting. One of the quick things I may want to do is just add a quick filter to take a look at what's in my movies database. And sometimes it doesn't want to resize so well. Let's do that. There we go. All right, so for movies, I may want to come in and, for example, if I grab like a production company. Oh, it won't let me drop it. Okay. Let's make it a little bit bigger. It's being fussy. All right, let's try that again. That's unusual. Demos, huh? Yeah, I don't think that's going to be it, but let's try that again. Okay, well, it'll come back in a sec. So one of the other things I can do to filter, of course, is I can stick it on the page. And the reason for this, actually, I know exactly what bug this is. And I'll tell you what it is. The reason that it has hit testing problems is actually I'm zoomed out in IE. And we have a little bug where if you aren't at 100%, the hit test areas get a little funky. So it really does work. It's just because I'm presenting at a really low resolution, it has some hit test areas. And you know, as developers, you can kind of understand how that happens, right? So it was working just as that could go. Okay, so let me go ahead and grab, for example, I can add a slicer and I can, you know, go ahead and say, well, I want to look at the Disney movies, and it'll go ahead and limit to that, right? That's some very easy ways to do that. Let's see if we can get, like, for example, duration. It really doesn't want to do that. Okay, we'll come back to that. So let's go ahead and delete that and get all the movies. One of the core capabilities around Crescent that we focus on is the ability to transform the data in a single click. So I have this table of movies, and I go through, you can see that, you know, there's a ton of movies in my table. And I can come in here and say, well, I want to change the look of that data, and I can change it into this card view. And within a single click, I get a completely different layout of the same data, right? So I haven't changed the data at all. It's still the exact same table. But that means as a user, I don't have to spend a lot of time thinking about where I'm headed in terms of my visualization, right? I can incrementally work up to the visualizations that make the most sense. So for example, if I come in here and I'll grab the rating, and I'll grab sales, and I'll look at the number of downloads. Everything shows up on the page as a little table, so me as a user, I can kind of verify that it's about the right thing. I've selected the things I intend to select, and then you can see that the visualizations up here light up, and I can transform it into a column chart, for example, or I can transform it into a bar chart or something like that, right? So it's very easy for me as a user. I don't have to think about, well, I really need a bar chart, and I got to stick this field on this axis and that field on axis, and oops, I got it backwards, and it didn't look right, right? Everything lands as a table. You convert it, and we have logic in order to help the user to land the things in the right place, okay? So let's go ahead and grab genre, for example, and we'll grab the revenue numbers for genre, and I'll turn that into a bar chart. So very easily, within about six clicks minus the filter problem, I've got a really great report, right? And that was really easy to do. I didn't have to do anything in terms of understanding SQL, understanding the database, understanding what visualization I want to target. I can really just quickly explore. But that's actually not the end of the story, of course. With this BI semantic model underneath the covers, we've generated all these queries. We know exactly what's on the page. We know exactly what the data model says. So we can do things out of the box for free, like interactivity. So if I come in here and I click on rated R movies, you'll see that the list on the left gets filtered by rated R, and the report down here, the chart down here, shows me the contribution of the rated R movies to all the different areas. So that, I didn't have to do anything as a user to get that interactivity, right? That all comes out of the box as I'm just creating the visualizations on the page, and that's all driven by the metadata, the semantic model that's built underneath the covers. So I can go ahead and look at PG-13 movies, for example, and I can see the contribution of that. And surprisingly, I've got a lot of science fiction PG-13 movies. And I can come here and look at comedy and show the reverse kind of trend for up here. So really easily I can get interactivity and I can get visualizations. Some of the other things that we can do, of course, is let's, for example, change that to a scatter chart. And for scatter, I need a couple more fields because I have a couple more axes to fill up. So let me grab revenue. I've got revenue already. I'll grab downloads and number of titles. And you can see it's just kind of filling in as I'm going along. And I can see that my biggest number of downloads and revenue is for comedy movies. And up here, I've got science fiction movies, also big downloads and big revenue. But you can see that the bubble size is smaller because there are not very many titles of science fiction movies in our inventory, but there's a lot of titles of comedy movies. Okay. So let's go ahead and add date to that. And I'll grab month. And what that does is it will add a play axis, right, to the report and allow me to play that data over time because there's really nowhere to put dates once I've got all the axes done, right? So if I go ahead and play it, it will show me the trend of that data over time as it's growing, right? And it's because it's Silverlight, of course, we can do things like zoom in, and I can focus on that particular visualization, okay? So, and also I can click on the bubbles and show the trails of that data over time. And you'll see that the spacing in this case is very important in the data, right? You can see that the Comedy movies are growing very steadily. The bubbles are very close together. But the science fiction movies are spaced very heavily apart because there's a whole bunch of bubbles clustered right here, right? So the growth of that data only happened very, very recently, right? So I can go ahead and move back in time to any particular area, and I can continue to play from there. And you can see right at the end of 2009 is kind of where science fiction started growing really fast, right? And if I click on that particular line for science fiction and pop it back in, you'll see that even though I was popped out, when I pop it back in, it retains the context of the interactivity that I did on the rest of the page. So you can see the contribution here, and you can see the list of movies got filtered, and of course, this is when Avatar came out on the service, right? So it drove all of the downloads pretty much on the Xbox service at the end of 2009, beginning of 2010. So it's really easy insight to get just by exploring the data. Another great thing that we do, because there is we optimize for presentation, is, and I'll show you that for a sec. So there's this design mode that I've been showing you. This is where the user who authors the report interacts with the application, okay? When a user comes in and looks at that report in SharePoint once it's saved, they actually come in on this preview mode, right? And the preview mode doesn't have the ribbon and it doesn't have the Field Explorer. It just allows them to look at the report and to interact with the report. There's also this full screen mode, and this is Silverlight full screen. Those of you who have worked with Silverlight know what it is. And that also allows you to have really great interactivity, so I can, you know, still play, I can still do the interactivity, but that means that I can actually take a report that I've worked on, walk into a meeting, project it, you know, just like I would a PowerPoint slide, and actually present the data. Walk someone through the process that I use with interactivity for how I got the insight that I got, right? So I could say, well, I was really looking at playing this data over time, and I clicked on science fiction, and hey, look, Avatar is driving all the sales. And I can really walk someone through that in the middle of a meeting and just present it without having to copy and paste and put it in something else or something like that. Okay. So because we have this capability or this focus on presenting the data, you can see, you know, for example, we have scroll bars. And we want to create some new visualizations that help users navigate a lot of data at once. So one of the concepts that we introduce is this notion of tiles. And tiles is basically, like I said, it's just a data navigator. Right now I have it working with pictures, but of course you could put text up there, right? So if you have different divisions, sales divisions or something, you could have east, west, north, and south, and that'll allow your users to navigate amongst those. But what it does is it creates a little container, and that little container gives you space to focus on whatever it is that that tile is by, right? So in this case, the tile is by movie, and if I come in and I say I want to grab the region, and I'll grab the region name, and then number of downloads and revenue for that particular region. I'll get a little data region that's specific to that particular movie, right? And I can go ahead and then navigate the different movies and see the download and revenue information for that specific movie. But on the right-hand side, I still have the detail information, the summary information for all of the movies. So as a user, you know, this is very seamless to me. It's really easy for me to think of things this way. But if you think about kind of the SQL statements that are being generated in the background or the concepts that are being used, we're really creating a master detail report on the left, right, where the movies are the master and then you're getting some summary information, which is the details about those movies. That's hard to do, right? But we make it easy to do by just introducing these concepts that are very natural to an end user who wants to navigate and explore data, okay? So that gives you a quick kind of introduction of some of the capabilities in Crescent. Let's go ahead and go back to the slides real quick. And while that's happening, so just a quick review of Project Crescent, which I've already shown you a little bit of. Very highly visual design experience, right? You interact with it on the web. It's very easy to use, focused on Microsoft Office. Pretty powerful capabilities in terms of banding and small multi. We'll talk about small multi. I haven't showed it to you yet in a later demo. But lots of different types of visualizations, rich metadata-driven interactivity, right? It's integrated with PowerPivot, with the VertiPack engine. You can have a lot of great interactivity out of the box with no configuration by the user, right? And animations, and it's also presentation ready at all times. So when we first started working on this, you guys use reporting services today. You know that there's quite a bit of difference probably looking at this application than your report builder and report designer, right? So it took us a little while to get the team to think about what those differences are. Report designer and report builder, and the power of reporting services is really in the richness of the capabilities that we can offer. And that's all through a ton of RDL capabilities, right? So if you look at report designer and report builder, what's the number one thing that you guys use probably? It's the property grid, right? The property grid is where you go and you set all these properties. You can use expressions, you can use custom code, you can tweak visualizations, and you have a ton of fine-grained control over exactly pixel-perfect how the report is going to look. That is not the goal of Crescent, right? The goal of Crescent is to focus on the data, focus on the user answering, getting answers with the data, and not the pixel-perfect fine-grained control of how it exactly looks and where exactly it is on the page, right? So to help our users and ourselves to kind of understand that change, we came up with these tenets that we use in designing Crescent, and I thought I'd share it with you. This poster sits outside my office, and we actually update it every season. So right now, outside my office, this is the summer version of this poster, but I brought the winter version because it is winter here and not summer. But basically, you know, there's one way to do things in Crescent. We don't try to enable multiple ways of doing the same thing. We want to find the right way, the most obvious way, the most frequently used way, and we enable that within Crescent, right? We want everything to be within two clicks. So if the user is using some part of the application and they want to, for example, change the visualization, that's two clicks away. No more than two clicks. Everything is within one or two clicks away. Everything is done in context with the data. So all of the data lands on the page, the user gets to see it live, there's no lag, there's no design time experience that's separated from the runtime experience, so you're not designing this abstract layout and then pressing some button, walking away for 20 minutes or 20 seconds, and waiting for that layout to happen and for the data to be populated. Everything happens with the data and the context on the canvas. Less is more. It is not our goal ever to add every little capability that we have in RDL to Crescent, and the reason for that is that's just too much for an end user, right? For example, we will never add custom code to Crescent. We will have probably some third-party capability in the future for you to plug into, but that does not mean that we would enable end users to go in and write really complex expression or code or have all the little fidgety things that you can do in Report Builder. And that's really important because we want to make sure that we're not overwhelming the user with options that they're not going to use when they're exploring and presenting data. So less is more. Choosing the right defaults, same thing, making sure that we are looking for the right defaults. And we've spent some time with some of the data visualization gurus, and we've had some interesting conversations about what the right default might be. So for example, things like highlighting and filtering, you'll see that some cases for a table, we filter the results when you do interactivity, and for charts, we do highlighting. we want to know from you guys, especially around CDB3, if those behaviors are correct, right? So we've chosen them, we've made some very explicit decisions about what the interactivity is and how it works. So, and we aren't going to enable multiple ways of doing things because that would break number one. So use it, give us feedback, let us know what your users think and what they believe is the right patterns of usage. Easy for the user, hard on us. This is all about that out-of-the-box capability, right? We don't want users to spend a lot of time configuring things. We don't want them to be spending a lot of time making things look good. So we do that, and we spend a lot of time on that out of the box. And highly performant and efficient is really about the underlying engine and the underlying model, and that's all based on the VertiPack in-memory column store engine that's underneath the covers. Okay, so those are the tenants, and that's how they surface in the UI. In terms of the architecture and the solution that you have to put together to get everything working for Crescent and for ad hoc reporting is you have IE and the Crescent client, which, like I said, in CTP3 requires Silverlight 4, and by the time we ship will require Silverlight 5. You can derive the model for that Crescent connects to either through Excel or now through BIDS. So if you're familiar with SQL Server 2008 R2 and Power Pivot, the only way to design a Power Pivot model, a BI semantic model, was through Excel, right? So you had to go into Excel and you had this great tabular experience, and that was really easy to use for end users, but really that's not what you guys want to do, right? You don't want to be in Excel. You don't want to have Excel's limitations in terms of data, even though we can now slam a whole ton of data into Excel. I'll show you that. That's really not enterprise scale, right? So for CTP3 and in Denali, what you'll see is we've taken all of the tools and the ease of use of Power Pivot for modeling, and we've created a new project type in BIDS. So you can go into BIDS and you can use BIDS to design these new BI semantic models that are tabular mode models. And what that also means is that you don't have to directly cache the data in the model itself, right? When you're in Excel and you're modeling, all the data lives inside the Excel workbook. That's not great if you're scaling out to a really big model. You don't want all that data on your desktop, right? So this gives you the ability to create that semantic layer and have all the data, process it and cache it on Analysis Services Server, very similar to the way that you would have done when you were creating traditional OLAP cubes. Okay? So this is a new way to model, a new way to cache data with a vertical column store engine, and you have the development tools for that in BIDS and CTP3. Okay? And that data lives on the AS server and can go back to the data source. Actually, when I created this slide, it's a little bit old because there's also the ability now in CTP3 to do what we call direct query mode. And direct query mode really allows you to go, like it sounds, directly against the SQL Server relational database. So you actually don't have to cache the data in Analysis Services or in Excel at all. We will pass queries back directly to the SQL Server relational engine. If you're going to do that, of course, because you don't have the in-memory engine, you may pay a performance hit, right? To alleviate some of that, have you guys heard of Apollo? Apollo is the column store index that's the same VertiPack engine but applied to SQL Server relational tables. So with a SQL Server relational table in Denali, you'll be able to create this new kind of index, which is a columnar in-memory index on SQL Server relational tables directly. And you want to do that specifically for Crescent to make Crescent run really fast against SQL Server relational if you're going to do that. Okay? So that's a new mode. That's also in CTP3. And you can use that. That's how you create the models. And then in the middle, of course, is SharePoint, where we want users to end up in terms of their collaboration and in terms of landing their reports. So to get it all up and running, you need to have your SharePoint install, and you need the backend, the app server. Usually there's a separation between the backend app server and the front end servers. On the back end, you have the RS shared service. You also have the Power Pivot service. That is also a shared service of SharePoint in Denali. And you have analysis services and reporting services, both in integrated mode. On the web front end, you install the Power Pivot web service, and you install the SSRS add-in for SharePoint. And those go on the web front end, just like they did in the past. Okay? So that's kind of how the overall solution looks. And I've talked a little bit about this, but let's talk a little more detail about the vertical column store indexes and the new model type. So the new BI semantic model has a ton of flexibility. It encompasses, there's this new term that we're introducing, the BI semantic model, encompasses what used to be UDM and what is also the Power Pivot model. And we're going to bring that together into a single BI semantic model. There's some work that we're going to have to do, obviously, after Denali to really make it seamless, because we're not going to be able to finish it all in the Denali time frame. But the goal is to have a single model with two ways of doing modeling. You can either model multidimensionally, or you can model in kind of more relational and tabular mode. Okay? You can cache data, or you can pass it through with traditional analysis services cubes. The same thing applies, right? You can have OLAP or MOLAP, or you can have ROLAP. MOLAP caches all the data on the server. ROLAP passes the queries back through to SQL Server Relational. The tabular model, the tabular part of the model, has the exact same concepts with the VertiPack engine or the direct query mode. So there's a lot of flexibility of that, and your users can have their choice of front-end tools, right? Excel will work with the new tabular model. Report Builder will work with the new tabular model. Report Designer works with the new tabular model. There are some little quirks about them because, and Crescent works. But basically, the existing tools work because the new tabular model understands MDX in addition to the new language, which is DAX. Right, so all your existing tools, Excel and Report Designer and Report Builder, will be able to connect to the new tabular model as well as UDM, and they just pass MDX, and that gets executed on the server for the new tabular models also. Crescent doesn't work that way. It isn't yet able to connect to a UDM, right? Because Crescent only speaks the new language, which is DAX. But we have committed to making that work. That's the part that isn't going to make Denali. It will be sometime after Denali, probably. And we're still trying to figure out exactly how long it's going to take for that to get there. So richness, of course. You get the rich modeling capabilities. There's a ton of business logic you can do, ton of fine-grained security, and we'll talk a little bit more about that also. And, of course, also scalability. So you have in-memory, there's really highly compressed data. We find that with the in-memory engine, about a 10-to-1 compression ratio for the data. So it's very performant, it scales very well, from the smallest models in Excel to the largest enterprise models. And improved SharePoint configuration and performance also for scalability. So a little what I kind of try to describe in words is in this picture. You have your front-end tools on the top, you have your data sources on the bottom, and you have this BI semantic model in the middle, right? And the model really has kind of three different layers. There's the data access layer on the bottom, and in the data access layer, and then on the right-hand side right here, you can see there are the two ways to do the modeling. There's the multidimensional way and the tabular way. If you're going the multidimensional way, the data access is either through ROLAP or MOLAP, and the business logic and the queries are generated using MDX, right? The data model is multidimensional, which means it used to be what used to be called UDM. On the tabular side for data access, you have the VertiPack engine, or you have the direct query mode, which I talked about. The new expression language and business logic for the tabular model is DAX, and I believe there's also a session on Power Pivot modeling, which is good. That's kind of the session you guys need to go to, right? It's not the end user tool session. This just gives you what your end users will use. But for you guys, you're going to be the ones creating the models that enable your users to have this functionality. So you gotta go and learn that modeling capability. Fortunately, DAX is very much like Excel. So any expressions that you're using and writing in DAX look very much like Excel formulas. So the learning curve is a lot less steep, and it should be very familiar, especially if you are familiar with just tables and columns in SQL Server. Okay. So next slide. Let's go ahead and take a look at that real quick. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time on VertiPack just because that's not the focus of this session. But I did do, because a lot of times questions come up, you know, what does it look like, and you know, what does it really mean? And so let me just give you a quick overview. And, okay, so what I have is this Excel workbook. Right, and this Excel workbook just basically has pivot tables and pivot charts and slicers. These are all available, were all available with SQL Server 2008 R2. Right, and what this is connected to is this Power Pivot model. Power Pivot is an add-in that you install in Excel with SQL Server 2008 R2, or now it's also a new project type in BIDS. Right, and what you get in Excel is this new tab, and you can launch the Power Pivot window. And it looks, you know, like I said, a lot like Excel. You add tables and columns here, and you do that either just copying and pasting, which if you're an end user doing modeling, That's the most frequent thing you would use, right? Is just copy and paste data from an Excel spreadsheet directly into the Power Pivot table, in the Power Pivot window. You can grab data from the database, from SQL Server, from Access. You can actually use a whole bunch of other data sources also. If you come in here and get external data from other sources, you know, you'll see that we can connect to Oracle and Teradata, Access, IBM, DB2, and reports, Azure Data Marketplace, and other RSS feeds, okay? Or a multidimensional source. So for those of you who are familiar with reporting services because you use it, they're the exact same query designers as you see in BIDS, okay? So if you need to grab data in Power Pivot, you are using one set of tools between AS and now with the Power Pivot, or the BI semantic model building. You don't have to learn two different types of queries and two different types of query builders. So the data that I showed you kind of started in this form, in this Power Pivot model. You can see I have now that box office, those titles, and the purchase information. I've just changed a little when I took this project and imported into BIDS before I published it. So, but this is kind of how it started. I've got some information here, and those titles, like I said, came from a third party to start with. And what this is Netflix actually has a web service that allows you to connect to it and get all kinds of movie information. So that's kind of what we did as a first step. Grab some of the metadata about the movies themselves. So you can see I've got about 127,000 rows here. And if I come in and take a look you know, at some of the other different tabs, you can kind of see what the sizes of those data are. You can see you can connect to have a link table to somewhere else, or you can import the data directly here. And when you're using Excel, like I said, all the data is actually cached in the workbook. So it's all local. But when you're using BIDS, it doesn't have to be that way. You can actually, like I said before, or hinted at, you can put a whole ton of data in Excel now, right, with the Power Pivot add-in. And if you can look down here, there are actually 101 million rows in this Excel workbook, right? And the power of Power Pivot is that it's all cache data in Excel. So I can do something pretty silly, like I can scroll all 101 million rows, which is totally useless, right? But fun to do. But that, you know, just shows you that you can stop everywhere, and you know, there's not a lag in terms of waiting for the data to come back, and that. So the experience is very seamless for a user. I can come in here and really get a handle on the data that I have, right? Even better, though, of course, is you want to do things like sorting and filtering, because as a user modeling, I want to get to the right subset of the data, right? So I can sort 100 million rows. It's instantaneous. I can sort it the other way. What's actually the longest is just loading the data into the UI, right? The engine is actually pretty much instantaneous, and loading is what takes a little time here. So that's really fast. Of course, you can also filter. So if I want to come here and say, I want just the euros, I can go ahead and do that, and you can see that I've narrowed down my 100 million rows to about 1 million rows. Okay. So for an end user, and it's the exact same UI in BIDS, it's really easy to use, and you can go ahead and model and kind of get a sense for what your data is and that. So the important things, especially the very beginning thing that you need to do for making sure that all this stuff works in Crescent, is you want to manage your relationships, right? So if you have a set of tables, it's really important to have relationships between the tables, even if they're not in the underlying data structure, because that's how we get the interactivity of Crescent. We got to know how things are related to each other, okay? So come here, I can show you just the relationships are very simple, just like you would create relationships within tables in SQL Server. The media table is connected to the titles, and the purchases are connected to the price and the time and the users. So very, you know, very simple kinds of things. So you can, of course, then all of the calculations and functions that you want to use, you want to create in the model directly, right? From Crescent, we don't want the end users to be thinking about the kinds of calculations they need to create. You create them in the model, and you enable them for your end users to use. They could be aggregates, they can be expressions, and like I said, the syntax and the types of functions is very similar to what you would see in Excel. Okay, you've got your date and time, math, trig, statistical. Even the UI is meant to look like Excel to make it easy for users to be writing these expressions. Okay. And for those of you who really like tabular view, there's a new diagram view. So that'll show you exactly what's in your model, how things are related. You can do your expressions here for the, you know, just for people who are very familiar with modeling with tables and columns. This is a good view for you. All right. So that's really high level, kind of what a model looks like, how you work with it, and there's a whole ton of things that you can do with CDB3. You can add now you can add hierarchies, you can add KPIs to models, all the things that you really wanted with Power Pivot in the first version but didn't quite get, including perspectives, are all here now. Okay. And once you have the model, that model can be surfaced either in Excel or it can be surfaced in Crescent, okay, or BIDS or Report Builder too. All right, so let's take a look a little bit more at some of the other capabilities of Crescent that I haven't shown you yet. Let me go switch to 3. So what I have here, and I thought a little bit about this before, I have a whole bunch of different types of demos that I do, and this one's really fun. It's another based on real data data set. It's about public schools in the U.S. So this is about one of the different districts in the U.S. And I came over, I was in New Zealand last week, and I came over here this week. And I realized that your school system is different than our school system. So I went around asking people, can you please explain to me what your school system is like here so I can kind of do the mapping? And I asked about like half a dozen people in New Zealand, about half a dozen people here, and none of them had children. Like, literally. None of them had children, so I had to resort to going to the web and figuring out what it is. But you guys have primary school, and primary school is very similar to our elementary school. We actually have 3 kind of tiers. We have we have elementary, junior high, and high school, and you guys can have 2. You have primary and then secondary school. So secondary school and primary school, you split that junior high period that we have. So your primary school kind of runs through about 7th or 8th grade for us. And then about 8th grade to through high school is what you guys call secondary school. So a lot of this data is about schools, and it's broken down by type of school, the elementary, junior high, and high school. But it's not grades. It's behavior problems, which is what makes it fun, right? So if I take a look at, for example, the behaviors of students, and I'll look at it by grade. Let's go ahead and grab grade level. The grade name is basically 0 through 12 are the important ones. And then there's a whole bunch of miscellaneous stuff that's very specific to this particular district that they use. And there are basically absence information and behavior information. So let's look at count of absences first and turn that into a line. Okay, and of course I can copy paste, so I can save too, but I can copy and paste here. Oops, except I didn't want to paste the title. I went to Control C and Control V, that particular chart. And in the second one, I will look at the behavior problems. Let's grab behaviors. And there's a count of behaviors here. And this area at the bottom that I didn't show you really before is where you actually go and control the fields that are being shown on any of the visualizations. So if you don't like where we populated by default, you can move them around. And that's the field lists and the drop areas here. Okay. So you can actually see that the absence information and the behavior information is kind of different looking, right? So the absence information is a very nice kind of bell curve, and the behavior information kind of skews and peaks, so you don't get really bad kids when they're too young, right? So let's look at that by gender, because that's also really fun. So I've got students, and let's grab gender. And you can see that the absences for males and females are almost identical. There's really no difference in the absence information, right? So let's look at that by the behaviors information. You expect there's going to be a difference between boys and girls? Yeah. I'll give it a sec. This data set is actually pretty big. It takes a little minute to run. So while it's doing that, let's just leave it for a sec. Let's also start looking at where these behaviors happen. So I can grab like the behavior location type and the location ID. So you can see at the top, one of the things that we make sure we do is we synchronize the colors across different charts, right? Something in RS that's hard to do if you've used BIDS and Report Builder. Lots of people complain about it. We'll fix it. But we fixed it in Crescent. Females are blue and males are red in this case. And you can see that the count of behaviors is very male-oriented, right? Boys get in trouble a lot more than women do, or girls do. And you can see kind of the curve is actually very similar, though, for that. So one of the other things, let's also do one more. Let's copy and paste that one down there. And there, not only is there behavior information generally, but there's also this flag in the data that tells us if the behavior was violent. So instead of just looking at behaviors, let's look at the count of violence. So let's take a look at that. And that's actually going to come up in a sec. So also there's these locations you can see. It was really funny because I spent some time with the consortium of public school folks in Washington State, which is where I live, and they said, yeah, you know, we have the exact same categorizations for where the locations are, and you can see, you know, where the behaviors happen in the auditorium, on the bus, in the cafeteria, in the classroom, in the gym, and then you put in the count of behaviors there, and I'll put in a little bar chart. Most of the behaviors happen in the classroom, right? And you can really tell it's real data because a lot of the other behaviors happen in this place called unknown, right? So like, yeah, we spend like hours with the teachers trying to get the right categorization for where behaviors happen, and then they don't use it. Yeah, that's kind of real, right? Users, they get a little lazy and they say, oh, I don't know where that happened. So most of the bad behaviors happen either in the classroom or somewhere unknown. And so this came back, and you can see it's actually really interesting. Violent behaviors peak at a different time for boys and girls, right? So boys tend to get in the most trouble at about the 9th grade, and girls get in trouble at about the 7th grade. And that really tells me that girls mature faster than boys, right? They get in trouble sooner, and they get over it sooner, right? So that's a really good overview of what this data is. But some of the other capabilities that you have is I showed you banding, but one of the things that banding is really great for, or tiles are really great for, is just this kind of big view that allows you to really compare different instances of the same thing. So for example, I've got schools here, right? And each of the different schools is a different page in the data. So I'm paging through, and I can take a look at the different schools, and I can really visually compare. All of this data in here is for each school. So before I showed you, you know, one little data region per inside the band, but you can have multiple regions. And if you go and take a quick look at the data, you can see that down here, as I'm scrolling through, the axis isn't changing for this particular chart, but it changes for this one, right? So you can see I've got 10, I've got 150K. So some schools are clearly bigger than others and have a lot more data information than others. To really make it visually comparable, if I come into Edit Report, there's a setting that we have, and we worked really hard to make sure that this works really well, is synchronizing the axes. And that's really important because what that does, it will look at all the instances of the data and figure out exactly what the min and max is across all the instances. So as I'm scrolling through, I'm not getting that jump in the axes. So I can say same for all of the y axes, right? And you'll see that the scale will change. And it should jump and get bigger. So that's going to allow me, as I'm paging through, to have the same ability to look at the different axes and compare them across the different instances. Okay, so now you'll see that, well, it's still changing. So there you go. So it jumped to 30K across all the different instances, and you can see that line really changed. And as I'm scrolling through, I can really see visually what the difference is between those schools. Okay, and sometimes you want to do that, and sometimes you don't. If the data really is very, very disparate, then you don't want to synchronize the axes because you get a whole bunch of views that where there's no information because it's so small. But sometimes if you want to be able to flip through and do that comparison, you can do that here. The other thing we have is this notion of multiples. So if I have this chart and I want to look at, and it's the count of behaviors by grade and gender, and I've limited to kind of the high school range, because filtering really does work. I'll show you the filter here. So if I have a clause here, it will work, and you can kind of tell the difference between high school and elementary school and middle school. And you can click. So with the filtering specifically, let's talk about that for a sec. You can get lists if your data is textual, and you get a slider if the data is numeric. So users can use that to set it. But if you don't want the list, or the list is too long, or you need something a little more complicated, there's also this advanced mode in the back where you can go in and actually type an actual clause, right? So I can do contains, begins with, and not begins with, equal, and it can and things together. So of course you can have more than one clause, you can have as many as you want, and they get all anded together here. So let's go ahead and go back to the list. I have high schools, and now my chart is basically full. I've got a series on, and if I come in here and I say I want to look at this by the schools and compare the individual schools to each other, not the school type, but the school. Let's grab the school name, and if I drag it, and I can drop it down here to this thing called vertical multiples. I could also check the checkbox. You've seen me check checkboxes before, so I won't do that. But what this is going to do is it's going to create one little chart for each school and allow me to compare the behaviors across the different schools, okay? So I only have one power converter, which is also really exciting. So trying to keep three laptops charged on one power converter is a little bit of a challenge. So you can see there's my small multiple. And what we've done is just laid out for each individual school the different behaviors for each school. So it's really easy to compare as you're just looking at the data how different the different schools are, right? You can see that the trends are different, the lines are different. And if I have more instances, I can scroll down and see them. And you can see Pine High School probably has the most, and all those behaviors peak at about the ninth grade. So it's really easy for a user to come in and kind of customize this. I can say that I want 2x2, right, which will give me 4 instances on each page, and I can scroll down and see the different pages. Or I can come in and say, well, I'd really like to see 4x4, right, and really see all of them at the same time. Or I can say, if I had more instances, you'll see some empties, you would see more of them there, okay? So it's really easy for users to create these views where it's really good way to consume a whole ton of data and be able to see visually what the difference is in those data, okay? You can actually also put another dimension across the top, which I'm not going to do right now, but you can have a vertical multiple, which right now is being wrapped around, or you can have it in two dimensions. So maybe if I wanted to look at the different years across the top and the schools down the side, I'll get the intersection of that data in a chart for each school and year, okay? So that's multiples. And that's a little bit more of what Project Crescent can do. And I think I have a couple more slides, so let's go ahead and go back to that. But while I do that, I'm going to... All right. So where does this sit in the BI reporting space? You've heard me talk a little bit about BIDS and Report Builder. One of the first questions we get is Crescent going to replace everything, and is BIDS and Report Builder going to go away? Absolutely not, right? I showed you the design tenets for Crescent, which were very different than the design tenets for BIDS and Report Builder. There was a whole ton of value in BIDS and Report Builder around operational reporting, around pixel-perfect reporting. That's really, really important and going to be an area that we're going to continue to invest in. So no, BIDS and Report Builder are not going away, and in fact we'll be making additional investments in those and have made additional investments in those. End-user alerting is fully targeted at those scenarios for Denali. Okay? So report designer is specifically targeted at developers, right? It's in Visual Studio. It's the environment you want to be in if you're creating reports, either for embedding in your applications using our controls or just operational reports that you want to enable your users to look at. Report Builder, we actually, when we started Project Crescent, we had a whole long debate about whether or not the Crescent capability should go directly in Report Builder, right? And whether that should be pushing Report Builder all the way to the end user side. But what we decided and what we found based on the feedback from when we shipped Report Builder was that it's really, really powerful and we don't want to lose that power. And it's being very attractive to IT folks specifically who don't want to be in Visual Studio, right? Their main job is reporting or it's BI and data, and they don't want the full overhead of the Visual Studio shell, and also with power users, okay? So that's where the sweet spot for Report Builder is. It's fully functional and capable in terms of RDL, but without the overhead of Visual Studio, okay? So we didn't want to slam in the full end user tool into that environment, which was very different than the environment that the true ad hoc users want to be in. So that's where we have Project Crescent, which is, again, web-based, it's very interactive, and it's for the end users. Okay, so the other things Crescent is not. Crescent doesn't replace all the other things in the Microsoft BI stack either, right? It doesn't replace Performance Point. If you're doing dashboards and you want to do KPIs and scorecards, you still want to be using Performance Point capabilities in SharePoint. It doesn't replace Excel, obviously, right? Excel is the great analytical tool we have from Microsoft, and it does great cell-by-cell calculations. It's great for forecasting, great for doing some kinds of write-back. And all of those continue to exist. Really, Crescent is a complementary offering for ad hoc reporting for end users, right? So before we get to questions and answers, I have one more kind of fun demo. Just, do you guys like games? Kind of. So I went online and I pulled out a game data set, and I don't have internet, but I should have shown you where it came from. It really is just you go online, you look for games, and you can actually get the game sales information from a third party for all the games that have ever been released. Okay, and the interesting thing about them is there's this really cool trend where the game sales, unlike kind of it's kind of like movies, the opening week is the biggest week, right? So you see this curve. It's the number of weekly sales. And what I'm going to play is each week what the sales of the games were. And you can see the biggest game. What is the biggest game ever sold? Do you guys know? Halo, yeah. So if I hover over this bubble, I think. That's actually Call of Duty Black Ops. It's not Halo. Okay? Call of Duty. And the next one is also Call of Duty. Gosh, what a surprise. Okay, but there's a really interesting trend. If I play this over time, did you see that? Most of the game sales are all in the first week. Then it went like slammed down to the bottom, right? And you can see over time, the sales are kind of very steady. And the bubbles are moving to the right because it's cumulative sales on the right and weekly sales across the top, right? But that's a very, very strong trend. It's just like movies. Opening weeks are very big, and then it's kind of flat all along. But you'll see, if you look carefully, there are these kind of bubbles that go up a little bit, right? So there are some games that manage to break that trend of having just the good first week, right? And they kind of get a second wind. And one of them is it Wii Sports? Oh, that's unfortunate. Okay, let's just refresh. That's when you know it's real code, right? And this box doesn't have CDB3, so you won't get that problem. It's a little bit older. But I do want to go back to it because it's, there's a fun trend there. So the bubble I clicked on was Wii Sports. So I have this theory that different types of games have different ability to kind of capture that second wind. So the first one was Wii Sports. Let's see if I can get it to crash again. Wii Fit Plus, right? So it looks like maybe there's something special about sports games. So let's go ahead and edit this report, and I'm going to turn on those filters again, really to prove to you that they really do work. So I've got this genre, and you can see the different genres of the games, right? So I'll show you, let's say, adventure. And what it's doing is it's just limiting to the games that are adventure. And when it comes back, I'll play that for you, and you'll see that it's kind of flat. So here there are like quite a few games and quite a few instances of those games, but this is adventure. And you can see adventure, actually it's a slower decline, right? It didn't get that very first deep first week drop. So some of the adventure games that had kind of a slow decline. Legend of Zelda, right? And this one, Legend of Zelda also. So very popular, kind of slow decline. So let's go look at those sports games. Oops, oh no. Let's do that again. So we'll look at sports games next. Any questions while this is reloading? Because we only have like 5 minutes left. Yeah. Yeah, so you saw the slide where it says we make things look good by default. In Denali, it will look good by default, but it will only look exactly one way good. So yes, we want to add formatting, and we want to add the ability to allow users to change the colors and things like that. We just don't have time. And right after Denali, we promise that's the first thing that we'll work on. Yep. Yeah, good question. So can you move the reports back from Crescent into Report Builder? The answer is no, for now, not in the Denali timeframe. We're going to kind of let you guys give us feedback about what you want in Report Builder and in bids for the next release and whether or not that's a really necessary scenario. We know it's a very different set of users that we're targeting with Crescent, and the question is how much back and forth between developers and IT and the information workers is there going to be. So we're waiting kind of to see how that happens. All right, so let's go ahead and play out the sports ones and see if we can see that. So my theory about the sports ones, and you can see that big jump, it's about week 25-ish, is that you go and play the sports games at some other person's house, and you can't quite admit that you like them. But you keep going back, and then eventually you actually admit that you do like them and you go buy them. And it's about week 25. So keep that in mind if you're looking at new games. But what do you guys know what retro games are? Can you name some? Uh-oh, too many.
Asteroids,
yep. And? Space Invaders. Yep. Okay. Frogger. Yeah, those are all good retro games. Pong. So I handed this data set off to a developer, and he really likes retro games. So he gave it back to me. You can see when I clicked on retro games, there's a really interesting trend already about retro games. What are all those things on the right? So I'll play it for you. And he showed this to me. So yeah, he kind of did a little massaging of the data. So, which was really fun. So you really can't have fun with data within Crescent. That's it. So come up and ask questions. Thanks a lot for coming.